The setup that we've been reading about in 1 Samuel was still in the time of the judges, and it was very humble. It was not something that was looked upon as very prestigious, but was quite low-key, but yet was the Lord's will, the Lord's perfect will for his people at that time. Samuel here is coming near the end of his time of ruling as there, and the people are looking around them, and they now come to him in verse 5, and they say to him, "Make us a king." And if I were to sum everything up that I wanted to say this morning, I want to say that the request was completely out of order. It was not their place to request a king. If you look in Genesis chapter 17, yes, the Lord in the prophecy of the word of God had promised that there would be a king. And David was God's perfect will to be that king. And here they were, they come to him and they say to him, "Your sons are not working in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like the other nations." Over there, back a little bit in Judges, and it's chapter 8 and verse 23. There were those who approached Gideon in a similar manner. And Gideon knew what to say to them, because the verse 22 of Judges chapter 8, it says, "Then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, both thou and thy son's son also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian. And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Yes, the Lord would provide a king in his perfect will for Israel. But that time was not here yet, but they dug their heels in. And they were adamant that they would, and resolved that they would have a king. And amazingly, as you look down through the chapter there, and folks, this happens sometimes. When they were determined that this was what they would have, God said, "Okay, let them have it." And the outcome was not good for them. And I want today to look with you at God's perfect timing and how it is best. That is the title today. God's perfect timing is best. I want to notice some things with you. And first of all, could I notice with you that there was here manipulation. Manipulation. The elders of Israel, they come now and they know that they cannot come to Samuel. He's too clever to just be approached and said, "We think." But they come to him with some clever arguments and reasons to him why they feel that they should have a king. Now, the first thing that they mention is corruption. And in verse 5, it says, "And they said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways." Unfortunately, that was true. The sons were not following after the Lord in the way at all, and they were living very badly. And they now grab hold of this, and they think, "Well, your sons are men of pure character. They are taking bribes." If you look at verse 3, their judgment's perverted. In other words, they'll work everything out to suit themselves. And also, they are interested in lucre. They're really, what they're after is as much riches as they can get. They don't care about the people. Now, they don't say that to Samuel regarding himself, but they do say that regarding his sons. And the perverting of judgment here that is talked about, and the turning aside after lucre and so on, this would all have been something that Samuel would have to consider as he was going to answer the people here. It says here, they turned aside. And if you notice the word aside there, it refers to going off course. It refers to stretching away out for something. You remember Ahab wanted Naboth's vineyard, and it wasn't his. It was Naboth's. It's quite good. That didn't matter. It still wasn't Ahab's. But Ahab stretched himself to get that vineyard. And first of all, he offered to swap or to pay for it. But eventually, he was allowing the death of Naboth in order that he could have it. He was stretching a way out to get something that did not belong to him. You think of David on the rooftop and how he saw Bathsheba. And he couldn't just simply say, you know, I want her to come and to be my wife. She was Uriah's wife. But he stretched himself away out and he put plans in place that he would be able to have another man's wife. And that is what he did. It was stretching out after something. That is the thought of the word here where it says, are turned aside. So they had the argument here of corruption. And while what the sons were doing was disgraceful, and no doubt would have been an embarrassment to him, the elders of Israel were deceitful and manipulative in coming along with that charge. And to simply use corruption in their argument, you will notice there that when Samuel replied to them, or when Samuel heard them, it says that Samuel was displeased when they said, give us a king to judge us. It doesn't say he was displeased when they said the things about his sons. He knew it was true. He knew it was true, but he knew that this was not the Lord's way of doing things. So they come with a very clever cover, and they have a predetermined plan to get rid of the current system of the judges, whether God approved or not. Feels all right, so we'll do it. Whether God approved or not. And I'm sure you have noticed with me, folks, in the United Kingdom, sometimes, and in other countries too, sometimes you will see what seems to be quite an amazing attempt by some in government quarters to deal with something that is wicked and evil. But very often when they're doing that, they're doing it to draw your attention for something that's worse. Or to play down the other evils that are raising their head. Someone said to me the other day, man who knows a few things and is well connected, if you want to put it that way, he says the general public really don't have any idea of what's really going on in the country. And manipulation. And yes, there's corruption, but sometimes we're so easily fooled. And we think, oh, they're going to deal with that. That's a good sign. But now to draw your attention away from something else. But we want to say here that they used, first of all, corruption. But then there was here also copying. Please look at verse 5. It says, make us a king to judge us like all the nations. They're fascinated by the glamour and the show when they're dazzled by what they see with all of these other nations. Remember the prodigal son. He had all he needed. His father loved him. He had all the material things that he needed, but his heart was out in the far country, as it's called, long before his feet ever were, because he was taken in, fascinated by what he saw other people having, and he wanted to have that. And just like the prodigal son, these people's values, they're all mixed up. And their departure in heart has happened long before they've ever come now to Samuel with these arguments, talking about the other nations. See, folks, when we have spiritual blessings, which the Lord does bestow upon his people, let's always remember that these spiritual blessings are much greater gain than any worldly material thing. If you turn with me, please, there to Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus and chapter 20. And here's what the Lord says regarding his people at that time, and they're good words. It says in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 26, and ye shall be holy unto me, for I the Lord am holy, and have severed you from the other people, that ye should be mine. Now, if I can very quickly look at that verse with you, there is the command that says, and ye shall be holy unto me. That still stands today, folks. Holiness is something to be strived after and to be increased as we go on through life. There's the command here, but look at the standard. It says, for I, the Lord, am holy. As you and I look to him in prayer every day, and we meet with him here in our fellowship meetings, and we look at him in his word and we see more and more about Christ, that is our standard. We will never attain to what he is in this life, but that is our standard, is the Lord and his holiness. And then it talks there about redemption, and I have severed you from the other people. All that the Lord has done for us, does he not deserve our little life to be holy for him? Bought by blood, look at that as well. And says, severed you from other people that ye should be mine. He has purchased his people. And yet there is the tendency in the hearts of human beings to want to follow after the nations, as it were, to be like them, to have what they have. And here they were coming to Samuel and saying, listen, look at all these other nations, how well it is with them. Make us a king just like they have. Not at all wrong. Remember Naomi and her husband in the book of Ruth there, and how when there was a famine coming, they went down to Moab. Should never have went to Moab. And they went down to Moab, and Naomi lost her husband and her sons that got married down there to Moabite's girls, Orpah and Ruth, and she lost them as well. And then eventually, in the course of time, she decided to come back, because it says there that she heard that the Lord was giving his people bread. What did the rest of the people that didn't go to Moab live on all the time? They didn't go to Moab. They stayed there. But Elimelech and Naomi, they just wanted to go down because there was more. There was more down in Moab. And they left Bethlehem. But all the folk in Bethlehem, they stayed there. And of course the Lord provided for them. They got it all wrong. And they made the wrong decision. And in her state, she says in chapter 1 of Ruth in verse 21, I went out full, and the Lord brought me home again empty. That's not fair. Yes, she did go out full. But the fact that she was empty was her own fault, because she wanted to go to Moab. And yes, eventually Ruth came, and we know that Ruth was brought into the lineage of Christ, and the Lord blessed in a wonderful way. But what tragedy and what tears and unhappiness there is when we give ourselves to trying to copy, as it were, the other nations. Just want to be like them. And most of the misery that Israel suffered was because of conformity to the nations. Something that they're warned about time and time again. You and I are warned about it too, about copying. It says over there in Romans chapter 12 and in verse 2, it says, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Where it says, be not conformed, the word conformed there means to take something and to make it like something else by bending it and twisting it and turning it. And that is what the world wants to do with the children. There's no mistake there. I think we all know that. They want the children, but they want you too. And to take you and to shape you to be like another. That's what it means, to be like the nations, as it were. And here you have these people coming. I'm sure his heart was broken as he listened to them. They're coming to him and saying, listen, we just want to be like them. How different. How different was Daniel in chapter 1 of Daniel, the book there. And Daniel, verse 8 says, purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which they drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Determined, and those who stood with him, they had determined as well that they would not be doing that which the nations required, or which was required of them at that time. Over in Daniel chapter 3, you have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They are answering the king and said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful. And the word there means to think it necessary. We don't think it necessary to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image that thou hast set up. Here is resolve and stability and encouragement for every believer today to not be copying after the nations. To get back to what we said a little bit earlier, when you and I have spiritual blessings, yes, material things sometimes make our lives more comfortable, but conformity to the world kills off spiritual zeal, kills off our desire to pray, it kills off our desire for fellowship with God's people, and it's to be found ever so often in the United Kingdom at the present time. It takes away our power as an individual Christian, power that God gives us to witness, to pray through, to be involved and do what we can from him. So this conformity or this copying was something that they were very blatant about. They just said, make us a king to judge us like all the other nations. So we're looking here at this manipulation. They came and they presented the case of corruption. Yes, Samuel's sons were not where they should have been, that's for sure. But Samuel was still there. And he was still alive and he was better than any of them, whether he was old or not. There was corruption and then there was copying. But if you look at verse 20, what it says there, please. We'll read verse 19. Nevertheless, there were people who refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, nay, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Now, the battle that they just had, not very long before they bring these words to Samuel, had been a very huge success. And their memories are very short because it was a huge success because Samuel prayed and God intervened. And that is why they had such a good success. And yet they've forgotten all. Sometimes people forget very quickly. They've forgotten all that the Lord had done for them. And now they're saying, we need a king to go out. And you know what the problem here was? There's no consecration of heart. There's no dedication to the Lord anymore. And if they had been spiritually right, they'd have thought, well, look at the Lord has done. They'd have been encouraged and upbeat, and they'd been praying more and encouraging one another to get on with it. But they couldn't look that far back. And it was only yesterday, as it were. And you cannot improve upon what God done for them. So in their manipulation, and that's what it was, they cast up the thought of corruption and then the copying the nations and then conflict. In other words, we've just forgotten that you prayed, Samuel, and the Lord intervened for us. But we want a king to go out. He'd be good at it. And how warped they had become. And folks, how we need to pray for revival. The Lord will come along and revive our hearts, and that we will know that we are revived, and God will answer prayer for us, and that he will revive our nation. How desperate things are. I have been hearing, even in this past week, a concern from so many parents about the proposals for Northern Ireland for schools, and how many people are brokenhearted and they don't know what to do. And we were just looking to the Lord, but how we need to do that, brethren and sisters, to look to him. So they couldn't wait on God's time. God's timing was best. He had his plan, perfect plan, that there would be King David there. But they come along and they say, we'll just have a king to reign over us. The departure, as I said, in their heart had already taken place. And now they're making it evident by their words. But there's not just the thought here of manipulation. I want you to look just a minute at, very briefly, at Samuel, and to say that there was continuation. There was continuation. If you look in verse 6, it says, but the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. He hadn't changed. He was distressed. No doubt he would have been disappointed and probably shocked at some of the things they come out with. But he had not changed. He saw nothing good in their desire for a king. He didn't deny how it was with his sons, but he was still alive and in God's, the place where God had put him. He could not probably grasp what they were talking about when they were saying about a king going out and fighting for us. And he's thinking, you know, we're prayed down the intervention of God just the other day. What's wrong? But he wasn't. That's the way he was thinking. He could have complied right away and said, okay, you're putting pressure on me. Don't be talking about my sons anymore. I want to get the attention away from them, and I'll do what you want. He didn't say that. He didn't do that. Remember Aaron, when Moses was up on the mount. Aaron, who was in many ways a mighty man. When Moses came down, Aaron was in the middle of the debauchery and helped them with their golden calf. He was there in the middle of it. But Samuel would do nothing until the God showed him what to do. And amazingly, if you look with me there in your Bible in 1 Samuel chapter 8, look at verse 7. It says, "And the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee." Verse 9, there, "Now therefore hearken unto the voice," hearken unto their voice. And in verse 22, "And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice and make them a king." Now I'm not sure that this was exactly what Samuel was expecting, but he could now speak to them with assurance that God was going to give to them their wish. I believe that God, in the midst of all of this, does encourage Samuel greatly. If you look at verses 7 and 8, it says, "And the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me." Of course they'd rejected the Lord. They may have tried to think, "Oh, Samuel, you're too old now, and these boys are no good." But they rejected the Lord, "that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which they've done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee." Samuel is greatly encouraged now because he knows that the Lord is going to do something here. He's going to grant them their selfish wish. But Samuel knows that the Lord knows that it's him that they have forsaken. And he continued on praying. And brethren and sisters, as you seek to serve the Lord, and maybe your efforts go unnoticed by the world generally, and the months come and go and you've tried to witness to people and try to win them to the Lord or to invite them to come to meetings, whatever you do, and you become a wee bit disheartened because you think, well, this is my mother or my father or my brother or sister, and I've been inviting them along constantly to meetings. I'm in the prayer meeting praying for them, and they haven't come, and you're disheartened. Are people rejecting you or rejecting the Lord? And you and I can be just like Samuel and say, well, we must leave this now in the hand of the Lord. He shows his devotion here in continuing on before the Lord. If you look at verse 10, "And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king." So there was here the manipulation. Wouldn't wait God's timing. There was a continuation. Samuel knew exactly how things were regarding the sons, regarding the people, but he was willing to wait on the Lord. And folks, we know how it is in Northern Ireland and how little interest there is in. Yes, we're really, really encouraged when we see children's meetings or missions well attended, but that's not all the time. And the general run of God's work in churches and so on, there's not a big enthusiasm out there for the word. And unfortunately, it would be easy for some maybe to try something else or to try to comply and to conform, as we mentioned earlier on. Samuel did none of those things. He just prayed. He looked to the Lord, and the Lord gave him the assurance that he wanted. "Listen, Samuel, you're just a spokesman. It's me they're rejecting, not you." And he was content to leave it there. I have a final thought here. We've looked at the manipulation, the continuation of Samuel. But I want to say the next thought is of devastation. If you look there at verse 10, if you look on ahead there, in the verses that we read, you see the things that Samuel, that was outlined, that was this king Saul was going to do for them. everything about it points to a man who would ultimately be very selfish. He would put them second. He would be thinking of himself. And he would be, I have to say, a very, very crafty individual. You'd have to be tuned in to see exactly what he was at. But the price of getting what they wanted was going to be very high. Someone said one time, be careful what you wish for. That's good advice. These people asked for this king, and the Lord, amazingly, as I showed you on three occasions, says, hearken unto their voice. Give it to them. Let them have their king. And he mentions there the effects of this getting out of God's perfect will. If you look there in verses 11 and 12, and he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself. He goes right on down there and what all he's going to take for himself. There would be damaging of the home. And the devil is out today to damage the home. And talking with different people about these things regularly enough, he's having good success in wrecking Christian homes and damaging Christian homes. But people so often will have their own way. And there can be a thousand excuses, but the main reason is the heart has departed from God. That was the reason here. There would be a harming of the home, damaging of the home. There would be a hindrance to prosperity. If you look at verse 14, it says, and he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servant. You see, sin always takes the best and leaves you with the dregs of what is left. Doesn't look like God at the time. But Samuel here is saying, the king that you want, if you read verses 15 and 17, he will trample on the law that's been laid down regarding these things. And he will work everything to suit himself, and yet you're determined to have him. And the Lord said, okay, let them have him. The devastation that Saul would eventually bring, there'd be a wrecking of homes and selfish pursuit, all about him. There would be the hindrance to prosperity, but disillusionment. Look at verse 18, please, if you would. It says, and ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which he have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Now, it was plain enough, folks. They were well out of line. And the word here is you will come a point when you're tired of him, when you know what is happening here, and the Lord's not going to listen to you. You see, sorrow is a sure product of sin. But nothing would do them but to get their own way. This is a very selfish age. And in the country, very often it's me. And I have to have my own way no matter what. Well, when you read words like that, the Lord will not hear. We can't afford to get there. There's too many people depending on us. If we genuinely care about the boys and girls, we'd be praying for them. There's no other way. No substitute for them. If we care about our parents, our sisters or our brothers or our children, we'd try our best to get them into meetings. There's no other substitute for that. Someone said that they shut their ears to God's message, and God shut his eyes to their miseries. They shut their ears to God's message, and God shut his eyes to their miseries. Oh, they got what they wanted, and all seemed okay. So often, if a person goes off out of line and off track, things seem okay for a while. But then there's payday, and it always comes. And I'm going to finish by turning you to what it tells us over there in Psalm 106. We're looking here today at how God's timing is best. They wouldn't wait. Their hearts were away after what they wanted themselves, and they paid a heavy price. If you look in Psalm 106, it's about Israel's history and how, unfortunately, there were so many times of misery for them. And the Lord had done so much. In verse 9, he'd rebuked the Red Sea. For them, he'd shown them in a most remarkable way that he favored them and he could work for them. But if you look at verse 13, they soon forgot his works They waited not for his counsel. And this begins, folks, with a lack of devotion. Where there's devotion at home, in your own quiet time, seeking the Lord, or here in God's house, being among God's people, that's where it begins. And you don't want God's counsel then. You want to follow your own heart. It says, but they lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tempted God in the desert. And he gave them their request. It gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. I think I've mentioned maybe before somewhere anyway, that the word leanness there means to diminish or to fade or to become small. They thought when they got all that they wanted, they would be on the crest of the wave. Well, the Lord let them have it, what they wanted, but they didn't have any joy and gladness. Sent leanness into their soul. Someone said regarding this verse, I can't remember which commentator it was, that they had full-fed flesh, but it made starved souls. Full-fed flesh, they got what they wanted, but it made starved souls. He sent leanness into their souls. And let's make sure we never get there, folks. That we never get there, that we look for the Lord's will regarding our own lives, regarding our country here, regarding things that we see in the country that we would like to see done. Let's remember that God is sovereign in all of this. What a mistake they made. And 1 Samuel chapter 8 is a chapter that shows us that you need to be very careful what you wish for. So good, so important to follow after the Lord. Samuel knew that, and to be in the center of his will. In these challenging times for many with children, and challenging times for us all, and for God's work in general, let's remember this passage. God's perfect timing is best.